I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. At Lighthouse, we're celebrating 25 years in business and just entering our 12th year of doing open line programs. This is a special edition program because of the issues going on with the virus. We have a few new exciting changes. First, we have our new 2020 open line format that comes with the launching of our new website. We also have an archive of past topics, which I'm sure most of you would find very helpful. Since we've been doing this for so long, we have topics on everything you can possibly imagine. And our guest, Barry Deutsch, we have a number of programs that Barry has done over the years also. We have written articles and also past open line programs. Our third book, Cracking the High Performance Team Code, is now available. And we also offer skills testing and 360s, which have been a huge hit with our clients. And we have remote lunchtime workshops, which would be perfect for right now when people are working from home. And we have them on stress and time management, leadership, and mentoring workshops. Again, this is a special edition open line. Today our topic is entitled, How Are You Coping with a Remote Workforce? My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. I'll be hosting our program today. We have just a few housekeeping items, and we're going to jump right into our topic with Barry. For those of you joining us for the first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insight to your organization. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to raise the hiring bar and assist companies with a variety of services I just mentioned, skills testing, 360s, interpersonal coaching, team building, stress and time management workshops, and much, much more. Our goal is to make this an interactive program. On your screen, you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights along the way. At the conclusion of the program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with Barry. So you can also write down two or three questions as we're moving through the program and just hold them till the end. I want to introduce and welcome back a close friend of mine, business colleague, just a wonderful, wonderful human being, Barry Deutsch. He is a well-known thought leader in hiring and peak performance management. He is a frequent and sought-after speaker for management meetings, trade associations, and CEO forums such as Vistage International, which is a worldwide CEO membership organization of more than 24,000 CEOs and senior executives. Many of Barry's clients view him as their chief talent officer. Barry is also frequently asked to present his Impact Hiring Solutions award-winning programs on hiring, retention, and motivating top talent, and leverages a vast knowledge base on 30 years in the executive search field, with a track of successful placements in multi-million-dollar Fortune 100 companies, entrepreneurial firms, and middle-market high-growth businesses. He has worked closely with thousands of CEOs and key executives to help improve hiring success, leverage human capital, and raise the bar on talent acquisitions. Barry earned his BA and MA from American University in Washington, D.C. Prior to his executive search career, Barry held positions of responsibility in finance, general management with Mattel, Beatrice Foods, and Westinghouse Cable. Our next program, by the way, will be next Monday, another special edition program, and it's going to be entitled Staying Focused on the Right Things During a Pandemic, and we'll send invites out for that. So, Barry, welcome back to Open Line, and thank you for being a part of our programs, as always.
Thank you, Dana. So, this is an issue that I've heard from lots of my clients over the last few weeks, and so I put together sort of what I'll call a combination of work that we've done over 20 years in hiring, performance management, employee engagement, retention, high peak performance management, and how do you do that in a crisis environment, particularly where your workforce might be remote? And so I'm going to walk you kind of through that little slide deck. It's intended to be about an hour interactive program. I'm going to try to get it done in about 40, 45 minutes so we can leave some time for questions and issues, because I'm sure many of you have those. And as Dana said, as we cycle through this, as I hit each point, if I don't say something, I come up, have an idea that's radically different from your thought or your experience, you've got a deeper question you'd like to get into, by all means, jot it down so you don't forget it, or send it to Dana in whatever the chat function or interactive function, and then we'll try to address that towards the end.
Barry, I wanted to mention to everybody, also, we do not have a slide deck today, so you'll see on your screen how are you coping with the remote workforce. That slide will stay static, and it also has Barry's contact information if you have questions after the program. And we'll send the audio out to everybody after the another day or so.
And Dana, we'll get the email address, and I'll send everybody a copy of the slide deck in a PDF format.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
So they'll have that, and
okay,
they could look it over and follow along with it. When they listen to the audio. All right, so let's talk about managing remotely in a crisis. This is a radically different approach than managing people where you can touch and see and feel. That's probably inappropriate for me to say, politically incorrect. But, you know, when they're nearby you can provide a lot of good oversight, but when they're out of sight, out of mind, it's a whole different issue. And so what I'd like to do is take you through 8 key agenda items or points that we want to talk to that would allow you to do this effectively. I think the first issue is, do you have the right infrastructure in place to even do it? Have you tested or flexed your internal network? If you don't have an IT professional, have you brought in a managed services firm to do that for you? Are you running a VPN? The last thing you want to do is have your employees sitting at a Starbucks or a coffee shop or tapping into some Wi-Fi that's easily accessible to hacking and sharing or breaking into your confidential information. Many of my clients have gone to a VPN kind of structure and set that up, but that may require certain hardware changes, certain bandwidth changes. You're definitely going to want to test that and look into that, and then make sure you've got all the security precautions, not only internally, but that you're teaching your employees, when you're working remotely, here's some security things to be thinking about. At one extreme, maybe they're all using the same standardized package on their computers and laptops like Norton or whatever it might be. And at the other end, maybe it's just some recommendations and a guideline. So that's one element of the technology infrastructure. I think another element of the technology infrastructure is making sure you've got some kind of a communication collaboration tool. Many companies use a tool called Yammer, which is what I call, Facebook Lite for corporations, where it gives people a chance to share information, interact, communicate, form groups, knowledge sharing. And as I said, almost all the Fortune 500 are using this, and many of my entrepreneurial clients find it to be an effective framework to set up, and it's fairly simple, and it gives employees a chance to communicate with each other, store that data, track conversations, versus everybody sending text messages in separate email chains. And there's a number of these, but I think Yammer is probably the very best one out there. You might want to take a look at that, yammer.com. Collaboration. From the perspective of video conferencing, this is the primary methodology by which we do meetings. There's 3 big ones out there: Zoom, Microsoft Teams, which is the old Skype, and GoToMeeting. The most popular one out of that group right now seems to be Zoom, not only because of some of the tools, the ease of use, the reliability of it. You can break people down into different meeting rooms. It's a pretty effective, inexpensive tool to do group meetings online. So those are a few of the kinds of things. The last couple are, you probably want some kind of format to let people share information without sending revision A, revision B, whether you build an intranet if you don't have one, you've got centralized documents, you go to using Google Docs where people can actually share and update the same document, so it's a real-time live document. But thinking through that strategy of how you do all the document editing from Excel, Word, and all the other tools and information that you might use. And then finally, since so much of what you're going to do is trying to organize more effectively, I recommend some kind of project management software where people can come together and collaborate on projects. sharing documents, having video, audio files together, project status, reporting the metrics, and probably one of the very best tools out there is a tool called Basecamp, which you can use off your phone, off an iPad, off a computer, and many of my clients tend to use that tool. Again, it's called Basecamp. Okay, so those are some of the things to look for on the infrastructure side. Now we come to the second piece of the equation, and I guess I should take a little back step and maybe just give you an overview of the different points we're going to talk about altogether. So one, we talked about infrastructure. Number two, we're going to talk about expectations. The vast majority of employees have no clue what's expected of them. Okay, this is an issue when you've got them all in the same place. When they're out of sight, out of mind, it's amplified 100 times. And so we want to be very clear and very precise about what the expectations are in terms of goals, outcomes, deliverables, expectations, metrics, KPIs, KSAs, and we're going to talk about how to do that and how to structure that. Third, online meetings. Running an online meeting is a radically different approach than sitting around a room. You have a lack of visual cues sometimes because you're not looking at every single person or closely looking at their facial expressions. Many people just sit back and listen and be entertained. They don't participate or they're intimidated to participate. And so we have to teach the managers or the facilitators of those meetings how to do a more effective job of getting input, communication, understanding different people's styles and the way they communicate. That's Dana's big shtick, right? Is the better we understand that, the more effective we can be in running meetings.
Yep.
Because some people, if they're very introverted, shy, reserved, they could be the brightest person in the room, but you're never going to get the information or feedback out of them when you have one or two people in a group meeting online that's trying to dominate the meeting. So we literally have to teach our chairs how to do this. Better agendas, keeping meetings on target, follow-up, those kinds of things. It just gets amplified, the problems of not having effective meetings when we're face-to-face, when we're then trying to do them in a virtual environment.
Barry, actually, you brought up a good point, that for those of you that are clients of Lighthouse and have done the in-depth work-style personality assessments, if you want to set up time to go through graphs of your people, we can give you some other from a different thought venue of how to approach them. So that was a good thought, Barry.
Plus, you know, one of the big things I'm going to talk about in a moment is this whole piece of employee engagement. And you've got a variety of people with different type styles. Some are going to need more pats on the back. Some are going to need more encouragement. Some are going to need the virtual hugs. You know, others are fairly independent. They don't need as much feedback. They don't need as much check-in time. And so to some degree, you're not going to apply the same methodology or approach to every single person on the team, but you're going to adjust it depending on who's on your team and what their needs are. I coach high school girls basketball. I've been doing that for a decade. And one of the things I tell my girls is, you're not going to defend every single person exactly the same way. Everybody's different. You need to understand what those differences are so you can be effective as a team together. And I think that's where Dana and the work that they do with the 16PF can come in very handy if you're armed with that data to more effectively be able to manage and understand people. Dana, anything you'd add to that?
No, that's perfect. Very good point.
Good. Okay. Number four, the manager and the employee. You know, most studies show that probably one of the greatest areas of employee engagement, happiness, satisfaction is the direct relationship an individual has with their manager. Well, we can maintain that relationship. We can just easily pop into that person's office, that person's walking around, you know, hanging over our shoulder, having water cooler discussions. But now that we're separated and we're virtual, I think managers have to work very hard and be coached in how to do an effective job of maintaining the trust, the listening skills, the coaching capability. You know, are all your managers doing one-to-ones with each of their direct employees? Are those structured? Is their best practices being used? It's a whole different game to manage people on a one-to-one basis when you're virtual versus when you're in the office and in, you know, close contact with people. Number five. Engagement. One of the most important elements of ensuring you get through this process with a highly productive, motivated workforce that's working hard and doing their very best is to engage them. And that engagement includes things like having a decent reward and recognition program, having managers understand how to give praise, show gratitude, show appreciation, how to teach them to be caring versus just task-oriented, how to stimulate their employees, how to build learning into what they're doing, and then how to do this not only at an individual level but also at the team level. Most managers are not equipped to do this. They haven't been taught how to do it. They haven't learned how to do it. If you have 5 or 6 managers, you have 15 managers in your organization, every one of them is going to have a different skill set around their capability to do this with their teams. One of the things you might consider is, you know, doing some kind of management assessment. Who needs what kind of training and coaching? Some of your managers are going to be much better at it than others. Do we need to give them specific training, coaching, role modeling, examples? Does their boss need to participate with them to show them how to do it? Number 6, communication. I guess the one word I would come up with here is over-communicate. What's the plan? How often are we sharing it? How are we soliciting feedback? How are we getting everybody involved? You know, it's interesting, when most people do employee surveys, the number one thing comes up that people write, I feel like a mushroom. You know, I'm in the dark, nobody tells me what's going on, you know, and we're virtual now. So how do we over-communicate and make sure that people don't start making stuff up, guessing, freaking out by talking, communicating, having a plan, structuring some kind of all-hands-on meeting where the CEO gives a talk on weekly on what's going on in the company or the vision, that managers are equipped to do this with their teams. And again, it all boils really down to how do we over-communicate in a very honest and direct way. Number 7, strategies. I'm finding that many of my clients across the country are absolutely paralyzed by what's going on. They're not doing good cash flow forecasting. They're not looking at where they want to be, what contingency plan A is if X happens. So, for example, if Trump, as you read the Washington Post or New York Post, Times articles, wants to bring the country back to more of an active status by Easter, is that going to happen or not? Well, if it doesn't happen, what's contingency plan B? And if it doesn't happen until the end of May, what's contingency plan C? And how do we communicate that and put those steps in place? There might be layoffs in the process. How do we communicate this to our workforce versus just hoping, you know, they won't get scared, they won't get nervous? I think the approach should be, you know, honest communication, but we got to have a plan to present to them. And we got to involve as many people in it so they feel part of it and invested in it as we go forward.
Hey, Barry, a question just came in. If there are layoffs, what do you suggest for keep communication open with those laid off, because we may want to rehire them as things turn around?
Well, I think it's important to be very clear about that, you know, and to share with them why you're going through these reductions in force or layoffs, when you hope things come back, what the triggers are for when you'd want to rehire people, and letting them know how much of a valued employee they are, and that if they're still available when that opportunity surfaces, you would like them to rejoin you. Again, it's just about honest, straightforward communication. And people will respect the fact that you're being honest with them versus trying to pull the wool over their eyes or hide stuff from them.
Should that something go out every couple of weeks to the people that have been laid off along with the staff? Or?
Well, I think this is where a communication plan comes in. What do we do with the people we've laid off? How often should their manager communicate with them? What should we send them? Should we have a virtual, 15-minute, let's get on a Zoom call and have coffee together, talk about what's going on in the company? I mean, that's a plan. Obviously, the faster things are evolving and changing, the more frequent you want to do this.
That's great. Thank you.
And last is, how do we move forward? How do we emerge from this, whether it's 3 months from now or 6 months from now, stronger than we are today? What opportunities do we have in this somewhat downtime, because revenue's dropping, sales are dropping, people may not have their schedules as filled up with, 100% capacity or overcapacity at work? How do we use some of that downtime to, like Covey talked about, doing the things that might be important, but they're not urgent, they're not firefighting? How do we look at, are there costs we can reduce, processes we can improve? Are there ways to improve employee engagement, customer engagement, so that when we do emerge, we're an even stronger, more viable organization? Do we have those plans and thoughts and goals and strategies and tactics? Are we starting to lay those out?
Gary, another question came in. Somebody just said, what do I do with my sales force? Everyone they're calling is saying, call me back in 3 months. We're having to deal with keeping alive at this moment.
So I'll give you a good example of this. So this little webinar that we're doing right now. So my primary webinar for my primary workshop for companies, which I do about 60 of during the year, is on hiring. Well, nobody's hiring. But hiring just went into a complete standstill, except for maybe, you know, emergencies or things like that. But basically, hiring has stopped. The new job ads being advertised on job boards is completely dried up. I think it's going to be 6 to 9 months before the hiring market even begins to recover. And so people just don't need help on how to hire more effectively. Yes, now would be a good time to start to put those things in place and put those processes that are impossible to do when you're in a rising tide and you don't have time to think about improving your hiring process. But the reality is, it's just not that important. It's not a big priority right now. So I took all of my work and I thought of, what do my clients need? They need help in figuring out how do we manage remotely. And so I've shifted a little bit by offering to help them in this dimension, either through complimentary workshops, providing consulting services, giving them advice, recommendations, providing content that might help them. Where are your expertise in your subject matter expertise for the industries you serve where you can actually help your clients to be more effective, more capable, and maybe it's not an immediate direct sale in the next 2 weeks? What can you do to ingratiate yourself with your clients? How can you add value to what they're currently trying to do? How can they look at you like a trusted partner versus just a vendor they're buying something from? So that's going to take kind of a rethinking of how do we engage? What would be the reasons our customers would want to engage with us? They obviously don't need to buy our product right now. They may not need our product for another 6 months by the time the economy restarts. So in these intervening 3 to 6 months, what are the things our sales or business development or customer support team can do to maintain those relationships and actually add value during this time period? And that's going to take a little bit of creative thinking of how we do that versus let's just sit back and wait for the phone to ring. I think that's the biggest challenge is figuring out how to pivot a little bit and find where can we offer value in this cycle.
So it's retooling the sales force so they're not just making phone calls to sell a widget, but rather to help the client.
Unless you're in the medical supply or grocery supply business,
right.
It's going to be really tough to sell anything in this market. And it just cascades all the way through. I'll give you a good example of this. So I have a kiosk manufacturer that was growing at like 25 to 30% a year, doing kiosks like the things that, you know, Disney would put in their parks to order food products. The clear stations at airports, those kind of things, ticketing kiosks. Well, all of a sudden, because it's face-to-face brick-and-mortar stuff, every one of their clients just put every project on hold. Well, now that starts to cascade back through the supply chain of, all right, all the people they're buying touchscreens from or battery supplies now they're not ordering those things. And the metal they use to build the kiosk. And the powder coating companies they send it out to be powder coated to. And so you're just not selling product, particularly if it's being used in an industrial commercial. You know, the car companies aren't selling cars. They're not selling ATVs. All that backs up. So how can we be useful from a sales and business development perspective to our customers during this time period? How do we shift from selling to more of a consultative approach in how we're working so that as we emerge 3 to 6 months from now, we become that trusted supplier. We become that trusted partner in what they're trying to do. And that has to do with services, content, information we're sharing, questioning, what are the issues they're struggling with, how can we be helpful to them?
That's great. Thank you.
That could be an hour conversation all by itself.
Yeah.
Right? And that's probably beyond the scope of what we're trying to do together today. So those are really the eight key points. I'd like to maybe spend a couple of minutes around each one. We're already, you know, we've got maybe 15 minutes left, and then I'd like to throw it open to hear your questions and issues that we haven't addressed. The one thing I'm not qualified to talk about is the legal implications of a lot of these things, like when to lay people off, how much notice you have to give them. You know, it differs state by state in all of these kinds of requirements, some of the communication you may have with your employees about what's going to happen to them, hiring, firing, and that's where you're going to want to tap into probably your resources from your HR consultants or your labor law attorneys. I'm going to talk about it more from a management perspective. So we chatted about the issues of technology and infrastructure. The next thing I'd like to talk a little about is why it's so important to define success. Now this is my normal spiel is, in a normal environment, it's absolutely critical. It's the number one issue related to both hiring and retention. If you are familiar with the Gallup research, you'll recall that the number one thing in terms of a retained an employee who's highly engaged is someone who understands clearly and precisely what their boss expects of their performance. Studies show that over 50% of your workforce has no clue what you expect of them. They understand what their job description is. They know what their duties and responsibilities are. They know what their skills they should have and the knowledge they should possess, but they don't. If I'm working for Dana, I don't know, does Dana want me to perform at level A, at level B, at level C? And when it's undefined, it's not clear, it's not precise, it's not quantified, time-based, written down, and we've agreed to it and negotiated it together, then people just make it up and gravitate to the lowest common denominator. And this gets amplified in an environment where they're out of sight, out of mind. So I think one of the most important elements of effectively managing a remote or virtual workforce, people that are out of the office, is being very clear and specific about what's expected in terms of output, outcomes, deliverables, expectations, results, KSAs, KPIs. You're going to have less control over actually physically observing them work, but if you've done a good job of defining what your expectations are, then it really doesn't matter how many hours they put in, because you're not managing the front end of the activity level, you're managing the back end of the output and the results. One of the things we might want to consider is, what are some of the risks of not actually defining success? What if we don't hit our targets during this time period? What if we miss our objectives? What if we don't flawlessly execute on some of the projects we're putting in place with our customers? What's the downside and the risk of that if we're not being clear and precise about it? The nice thing of being in an economy like the last 10 years, where, you know, you've all heard the trite phrase, a rising tide lifts all boats, is we don't have to really focus much on the details. We just get, everybody gets lifted, nobody has to worry about great processes, but the minute things turn down, then suddenly all those mistakes, errors, inefficiencies become highlighted. And that's where we want to be able to define what we expect from each manager and thus each department and show that in a cascading fashion. The nirvana of performance management would be to reach a point where every single person in your organization has a clear, precise, written definition of what's expected of their performance. That doesn't happen overnight. That takes a little while. In fact, that's one of the ways I've pivoted in my business, is shifting from helping people figure out how to hire folks more effectively to helping them how do we define roles from management level positions all the way down to a forklift driver in the warehouse. We have a couple of different methods for doing this. One we call soaring, which has a nice visual reference point of soaring up there with the eagles floundering down and with turkeys. I like this process, probably because I invented it, but it walks through defining, we call it soaring, which stands for defining what the issue or problem is, identifying the obstacles in getting that done, creating action steps of how to overcome those obstacles, and then defining the measurement stick that tells us we actually got there and we had great success around it versus average or mediocre success. I have, if you're interested, I have a slide deck on this. We've written a book that this is the core central theme in it with two chapters dedicated to it. I'll be glad to send you. And I have plenty of examples and illustrations of what the output of this would look like on a physical piece of paper, both for roles like forklift drivers, administrative assistants, field techs, and manage, you know, everything in between presidents to the frontline kind of roles.
Barry, is that in your book, You're Not the Person I Thought
Yes.
I Hired?
Yes. And so if everyone's interested, I'll send out a copy of that, a link to that PDF.
Okay. That'd be great. If you haven't read Barry's book, it's I call it the Bible of Hiring. You're Not the Person I Thought I Hired. It covers everything you can possibly imagine, from beginning to end, from hiring and management, so it's a very applicable in both markets, such as today.
And 50% of the content overlaps into retention, because it's the same kinds of issues. Okay, so that's at a management level, is defining what are the outcomes and deliverables. But 80 to 90% of your workforce are not managers; they're staff. And so one of the things we want to be able to do is, how do we measure them? Well, in staff-related roles, we measure KPIs, not outcomes. You know, how many calls did you transfer properly? How many pieces of equipment came off the line that were at a certain quality level? How many calls in customer service had to be escalated to a management level? We measure KPIs, key performance indicators. And every job has 3 to 4 of these, and then 3 to 4 related behaviors that back those up. And so we want to be able to define, what does success look like around the behaviors and the KPIs that the most successful people in a comparable role in a comparable company would do? What's the problem with both of these approaches, either at the management or staff level? It's time-consuming to do this. It's not something that you pluck off the internet and all of a sudden you've got it defined. This can actually take a couple of hours. I mean, one of the things I ask my clients a lot of times in the workshops I do is, why do more people not do this? And the most common response is, because it takes a couple of hours. I don't want to spend a couple hours on it. I want to spend 5 minutes on it. And yet this is the most important element of performance management and employee engagement. Okay. Online meetings. Next topic. Do your managers and anybody else who would be a facilitator, leader, running a meeting, organizing a meeting, do they have the skills to actually run an effective online meeting? Not the same as being face-to-face. You know, do they understand how to set a good, tight agenda? Do they understand how to take questions, how to encourage participation, how to recognize what the different personalities of the team are, how to read visual clues, you know, in an online kind of Zoom meeting? Do we need to do a little bit of training to teach people, or do we just assume because we're putting you in charge of running a meeting, you should have all the skills necessary to do this? Sometimes that's the furthest thing from the truth. So one thing to think about is, how do we need to train around that? We talked earlier about this idea of managers and subordinates, and how do you build trust, encourage participation, engage employees, listen to them, show empathy by listening. And I think one of the most valuable things that managers can do is to start to do a regular, weekly, perhaps daily, one-to-one with each of their employees. These can last anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes. We can use the definition of success, which we talked about a few minutes ago, as the document that we're sharing and guiding our conversation with each other. But I do think, whether it's every time we talk or every other time, we need to build in a little bit of time to understand what's going on in someone's lives. You know, your grandfather is sick and on a ventilator through the virus. You know, you need time off to take care of your mother in the nursing home. Whatever it is, we have to show a little bit of empathy and show people that we care by asking questions and getting to understand what's going on behind the scenes with them.
Barry, a question just came in. Do you help people to how to train the managers on how to run remote workforce?
You mean do this workshop for companies specifically with their management team?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because then we get into a little, you know, it even deeper at that level, because then it becomes, what are the steps? What are the action items? who's doing what, who's responsible for managing this. So it's much more of a workshop on for management teams of how do you do it, and then how do you actually execute to get it done.
Okay, and you also do one-to-one training on this too, don't you?
Correct.
Okay, okay. And everyone's going to get the audio and also Barry's contact information if you want to talk to him further about putting a workshop together specifically for your organization, because people do need help in this area, and might as well go to the pro that knows how to do it.
All right, thank you, Dana. So let's talk about now, let's shift to the next topic, which is how do we engage our employees when they're out of the office? So most studies right now are showing, and it probably just fell right off the end of the map, that 50 to 70% of your workforce, this was before the coronavirus hit, 50 to 70% of your workforce were disengaged. About 50% is what Gallup would have called the disengaged group, and about 20% in addition to that would have been the actively disengaged. They're trying to get by doing the absolute minimum. They don't care that they work for you. All they really care about is getting a paycheck. You're just a way station on the path to something different. They're not putting in any extra effort or any kind of proactive participation. They're not leaning in. They don't feel any sense of ownership. Now, what's the good news? The good news is you can move that needle. And the steps to move that needle are actually pretty simple. Let me go through a few things of maybe five action things that you could immediately start to do. Number one is teaching managers how to give praise, how to say thank you. For most people, it's not natural. Most managers, especially new managers, get so caught up in the task orientation of their role that all they care about is getting stuff done. And there's a whole human side of this, and again, this is where Dana and Ellen specialize, in being able to say, thank you, I appreciate what you're doing, showing gratitude, being appreciative. It's probably the number one thing that most employees look for, and it's part of that Gallup survey of, you know, did someone pat me on the back for something I did in the last couple of weeks? The problem is most managers don't know how to do this. They're not. Some are good at it, some aren't. How do we get everybody on the same playing field? And it's a learned management skill. What do we say? When's the most appropriate time to say it? Where would we give praise and recognition? We're not just going to, you know, it's not U.S. soccer where everybody gets a trophy, but when are the most appropriate times to give praise and recognition? What are the words and phrases we use? Is it written? Is it a gift? Is it said in a one-to-one? Is it said in a group session? There's a strategy and set of tactics and best practices that relate to doing this. Number two, the action step that we can take is caring and empathy. Like I said before, it's showing you care. It's giving people virtual hugs. It's taking the time to listen to them. It's managers who should be knowing what are the names of their kids, what are the names of their pets, what problems and frustrations are they facing in working out of a home office. And having just a few minutes of that to engage with their employees so they think their boss and company care about them. Again, that's a learned capability to be able to ask those kinds of questions and how to listen to the responses. Number three, stimulation. The work volume just fell off the end of the map. We're not selling. We're not manufacturing. We're suddenly trying to figure out what do we do? How do we fill people's times? And I think this is a great time to focus on what would stimulate different people. What are they looking for? Is it along the dimensions of learning? Is it along the dimensions of giving them a specific kind of project, challenging them in some way, asking them to do some research? It's you have an unbelievable amount of capacity in your workforce. How do we tap into that and get people to feel like I matter, I'm doing something that's valuable, I'm contributing, it's not just busy work, it's actually helping the company to be successful. But it takes some upfront planning to think about who do we assign this to, what do we assign, how do we measure it, how do we coach them through that. Number four, learning. This downtime is a great opportunity for us to teach with, you know, skills, knowledge, share information, and help people gain learning and knowledge that will help them be even more effective in 3 to 6 months when we emerge from this coronavirus social distancing thing. What kind of assessment should we take each employee and look at? What do we need to train you on? Are there online courses that we can send you to? Are there, you know, pre-structured webinars that they can listen to? Are there, you know, are we doing lunch and learns? One of the things my clients have started to do is lunch and learns, where they assign to each person on the team a topic that that person then has to present on. And maybe they're doing, you know, an hour of this on a weekly basis or every other day. But this is a great way to get the team involved and force them to do some kind of learning and share the results of that with the group. Plus, it's a little bit fun. You got to look to build some fun into this process. And so people get engaged around that. And then finally, the last piece is, how do you engage teams? How do you make sure that you're doing really effective team management, that people don't feel like it's just busy work, that they're not making a valued contribution, that their teams don't matter? That includes being very specific about the purpose of the team, what the goals and outcomes desired from the team are, what the time frame for those goals and outcomes are, making sure the teams understand what tools they have, what their level of decision-making is and their responsibility on the project, what's going to be the outcome they're going to recommend, or what's the framework of that outcome. And so they jump into it with a lot of motivation, commitment, excitement, because they have a clear understanding of what their purpose is and how they matter. That gets amplified in an environment where we're not face-to-face and spending lots of time with each other in the office. Communication. As I said before, and I can't overemphasize this enough, over-communicate. Group meetings, all hands-on meetings, managers to teams, managers one-on-one, across the organization, down from the top, up from the bottom, sideways across the organization. We want to think about, how often are we going to communicate? What's the format of that communication? Are we going to send something out in an email? Are we going to call a once-a-week all-hands-on meeting where the CEO makes an address to the group? How are we going to do this to keep people aware of what's happening, what the vision is, where we're headed, what might happen to their job? Because when we don't do it, people start making stuff up. They start guessing and they start freaking out, and pressure and stress come into play. Last couple of categories, and then we'll throw it open to questions. What's our strategy? Do we have a plan in place? Do we know what we're going to do, how we're going to do it, what the outcomes of it are, and do we have a milestone set that, for example, if this doesn't happen by Easter, this is what we're going to do, and if this doesn't happen 2 weeks after that, this is what we're going to do. Contingency plan A, contingency plan B. Cash flow, tactics, projects, who's assigned, who's responsible. Your organization wants to know, as leaders, do you have a clear path of where we're going and how we're going to get through this? Versus, let's just kind of hunker down and wait it out and see what happens. And then finally, this is a great opportunity to improve whatever you do. Do we have plans in place of how are we going to reduce our cost structure? Let's say we're in a long-term, because the economy is just not going to restart, as many of you know. It's not going to restart on a certain day. It's going to take us, at this point, 6 months probably to get it going again, and maybe even longer, particularly if there's a worldwide recession. So how do we get better? How do we reduce our cost structure? How do we improve our cash flow? How do we improve the way we engage with our customers, our internal processes, our external processes, the way we go to market? These are great times to think through all those strategies and get much better at it, so that when things start to pick up, now we've already done that and put that in place. 8 key things to think about as we start to cycle through the next 3 to 6 months and emerge stronger and more capable than we are today. Then I'd like to throw it open to, you know, for the last 15 minutes here, maybe some questions and thoughts that folks might have.
Okay, that was a great program. We're going to open up the line in just a minute here. Two things. One is, I'm going to ask everyone to please put your phone on mute and do not put your phone on hold. Otherwise, we'll all be listening to Muzak. So again, put your phone on mute and don't put it on hold. And when you have a question, just unmute your phone. And sometimes there's a lot of questions, sometimes there aren't. You can always reach Barry if you just want to do a one-to-one and ask Barry some additional questions. You have his contact information on the screen. Also, next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific time. We have another special edition open line, staying focused on the right things during a pandemic, and we'll be sending invites out for that. So let me open up the line.
Dana?
And yes, Barry?
So the other piece that might be interesting is I'd love to hear if you're doing something specific around any of the areas we talked about, or you're doing something that didn't get mentioned that you find valuable around, you know, planning, strategy, employee engagement, working with remote teams. I find sometimes in these webinars and the workshops I do, sometimes we learn as much from each other as me standing up here, you know, spewing like a fire hose. So I'd love to hear if you've got a great example or illustration of something you find that's working well in your organization.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. So let me unmute us, and everyone will be open. All righty, the line is now open. So any questions for Barry? Fire away and unmute your phone if you have a question.
Hi, Barry. This is
Hi.
Mary McCormick calling.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, Dana. I have a quick question for you. We are clearly working remotely, and we are our workforce is currently engaged via a variety of online softwares as well as project management softwares. But I'm a little bit more interested in this opportunity. Clearly, we're to look at the KPIs, the measures and deliverables. And like you said, it doesn't happen overnight. It takes time. How would you talk about if you haven't really engaged on the KPI side in the past and you want to start doing that, what would your first steps be? Get us to start looking at what that success actually looks like?
So I think this should be a top-down cascading effect. So the first step would be to, obviously you have some kind of business plan, budget, maybe it's short-term, maybe it's 6 months, a year, whatever that plan is. And then to take that and split it up among your management team of who's going to do what and when are they going to do it and what are the action steps they're going to take. And then once you've done that at the management, leadership, departmental level, then you cascade that down to the next level, which depending on how many layers and folks you've got might include first-line supervisors, team leads, light managers. And then the final step would be to take that down to each individual worker on those teams of what are the KPIs that are being used to manage them. That's in normal circumstances, when you start that process, that's about an 18 to 24-month cycle to get that embedded into the fabric of your business.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have a little more luxury because we may have more time right now to do that, and so you can shorten that cycle. But like you said, it's not something that happens overnight. You just don't pluck this stuff off the internet. Like, how do you know what great performance and outcomes would be for a forklift driver or for a customer service rep or for a welder or a field tech? And so we need to take the time to work through that. Most of my clients have told me over 20 years that once they've done this, they tend to see a 25 to 30% boost in efficiency and productivity based on different productivity measures.
So if you're as CEO, and I am, that would be then being very clear on the outcomes and deliverables of your top managers then?
Correct.
Okay, and then through that, what the expectation of is not only what their job description is, but truly what their role is and what your expectation is to move that cascade down, I mean that action steps down.
Yeah. Now there's a couple of thoughts to this. First, the book reference that I would give you is one of my favorite books of all time, and it's a Bible in the, you know, in the management ranks. It's a book by Patrick Lencioni called The Five Dysfunctions of the Team. Are you familiar with that?
I think so. Yes.
All right. So,
oh,
so
yes,
that's,
I am.
That's a literal Bible in that, and it's written in his common, you know, he's written like, I don't know, 15 books, and they're all written in a parable format. It's a great book. So he talks about the story at the very beginning about how none of the team managers, how none of the managers on the team really understood what was expected of them. And so that was the first part, is defining that. The nirvana of doing this is once you get this done, then the teams begin to self-manage. They don't need a central figure like the CEO to tell them what to do or to come back for, you know, well, should I do this? Should I do that? Let me transfer the problem onto your back, because it's very clear what needs to be accomplished and what we've all agreed to. So that's one element. The second element is, I would probably suggest to you, just take your current job descriptions and fling them out the window. They're the most useless, worthless set of tools for managing and predicting performance. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen because we've been using these for, you know, I don't know, 50 years to 100 years. So what I suggest to my clients is you can take your existing job descriptions and modify them. Either attach a supplemental page that shows the expectations that would be dynamically changing every, you know, quarter, 6 months, year. Create a little box at the bottom where you can put these into. And again, that becomes the dynamic change piece to the job descriptions and role definitions. So there's a number of ways to do a hybrid approach of having both a traditional job description and defining expectations and performance.
Right. Yes. Those defining expectations and performance, you know, you can put, like you said, you usually have a job description and then you put it away, right? And nobody ever looks at it again. So to keep that ever top of mind so that you have good communication with your managers, that's going to be very important. So that dynamic changing piece, is that part of what your expectations are then? Is that the dynamic changing piece?
Exactly. So for example, you assign me six things. I got six core things I have to deliver back to the business. But by the first quarter, I've knocked four of those down. Well, I just don't wait the rest of the year for you to do the other two. Now in a stair-step fashion, I'm going to raise the bar, and here's the next set of expectations for the next quarter and the next quarter. And so we continually modify it based on what's going on externally in the business and what you've already achieved and delivered.
Got it.
In North America, in the U.S., we have this process where we set goals for the year, and then we don't retouch them until the end of the year when we're doing a performance review.
Right, which is kind of silly.
Absolutely.
I mean, it sounds like that the engagement, I mean, we have a very good company, and everyone really cares, I think, very, very deeply for each other, and we really, especially at this time. But that does not preclude the fact that now we need even more critically than before the clarification on the expectations of who's doing what, because that's going to be really, really important if we're looking at cash flow and revenue.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing is, even more important than you needing it to be able to execute flawlessly, your employees desperately crave understanding what you want from them.
Yes. Exactly. So, Betsy, I want to be thoughtful about that process too. You know, I don't want that. That's something that, like you said, you don't just pull that out of the air.
Right. So, I'll send you some material that might help in this tactic that you're pursuing to, you know, get more clarification around it, and you might find that helpful. And if you've got any questions, we can follow up post workshop
here. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you, Dan.
You bet. Yeah.
Thanks, Mary. And also, Mary or anybody, you can email Barry@impacthiringsolutions.com, which is on the screen right now. Any other questions? We have a few minutes left.
Any issues anybody's struggling with in terms of managing remotely? Usually get a bunch of questions right after the workshop.
Right, right. And so, and if anybody wants to contact Barry again, you can call him. Barry's very generous with his time, and he'll walk you through this. I know some people don't like to go public with their questions. Or, again, email Barry@impacthiringsolutions.com. Any last-minute questions before we close for today? Because we covered a lot of great material. Okay. So, Barry, thank you for being part of Open Line again, our special edition program, and look forward to having you back on our program again, and wish everybody to stay safe and sound. And again, next week we have our program Stay Focused on the right things during a pandemic. That's a big thing. And you can have your employees and staff members join in on that topic. Again, we'll send invites out shortly on that. So,
thank you.
Barry, any closing thoughts?
No, just I want to wish everyone much success in managing through the next 3 to 6 months.
Great. Thank you so much, everybody, for attending. Bye-bye. Have a great
day. Bye-bye.